I'd been living in the same small town for as long as I could remember. My days were pretty standard. Work at the library, grab a coffee from the diner, and then home to watch TV with my cat, Frisky. Everything changed when my best friend Danny introduced me to the dark web. He showed me how he'd navigate through encrypted sites, buying odd trinkets or old books. The whole thing seemed intriguing. After seeing Danny delve into it, I started exploring the dark web on my own. A couple of times a week, I'd log on, curious about the hidden treasures I might find. It felt like a secret online marketplace, and I got a kick out of discovering random items. One particular night, I came across a listing for a mystery box that promised, quote, unique collectibles. Thinking it might be fun, I placed a bid. About a week later, a nondescript brown box arrived at my doorstep. It was surprisingly heavy. There wasn't any return address, just my name scribbled in a hurry. A strange feeling came over me, but I pushed it aside, eager to see what was inside. I put the box on my kitchen table and used a knife to open it. The first thing I noticed was this weird smell, like old books mixed with metal. Inside, there were Polaroid pictures, USB sticks, and stuff like necklaces and hairpins. The pictures were of different women, and it looked like they didn't know they were being photographed. It was creepy. I couldn't help myself, so I plugged one of the USBs into an old laptop I had laying around, since I didn't want to chance destroying my daily laptop with a virus. The files contained videos and audio recordings. One video was of a woman just walking in a park, and it was clear she didn't know someone was filming her. Another one was just the sound of a woman humming. The more I saw and heard, the more my stomach knotted. This wasn't just random stuff. It was like someone was stalking these women. After going through the items, I was a mess. My mind raced with thoughts of what to do next. Part of me wanted to go straight to the police. Another part was paralyzed with fear, thinking the person behind this might find out and come after me. I even thought about telling Danny, but it felt too risky. I didn't know what to do. And then, as if things weren't bad enough, another box showed up at my door. The second box was even heavier than the first. I took a deep breath and opened it up. Inside, along with more photos and USB sticks, there was this old tape recorder. I hit play, and some weird messed up voice started talking about watching people and collecting stuff. The voice said they knew that I seen what was inside the boxes. I felt my body go numb and my head felt really fuzzy, almost like I was ready to pass out. I started freaking out, so I packed everything and drove over to Danny's place. He looked at the stuff and said we had to go to the cops. While we were trying to figure things out, my phone pinged with a notification. A text from an unknown number popped up, which read, "Like the collection?" It hit me then. This psycho had somehow managed to obtain my phone number. They didn't know my every move. At least I didn't think they did. But they knew enough to mess with me. I went back home later that day, feeling nervous and paranoid as hell. The idea that someone out there was able to hack their way into my personal life was too much for me. When morning came, I knew I had to go to the police. I hoped they could find this creep and make it stop. The police station was busy when I got there. I showed them everything, and they wrote it all down. They seemed pretty concerned, especially about the tape recorder and that text. They mentioned they seen some messed up stuff from the dark web, but this was something else. They said they'd do their best to find out where the packages came from and who sent that text. But they also warned me that people who do this kind of stuff are really good at hiding. After all this, I stopped going on the dark web. I got a new phone number, just to be safe. But I couldn't stop thinking about the women in those videos and audio clips. Their faces and voices kept playing in my head. I kept wondering who they were, if they were okay, and how they ended up in someone's sick collection. It felt heavy, knowing I had seen parts of their lives I shouldn't have. In the end, the police never managed to track down who sent those boxes. The number that texted me went dead, and there were no leads or clues on the packages. It felt like the dark web had reached out, messed with my life, and then just disappeared, leaving me with a bunch of questions and no answers. When I was 17, I was all about my computer. I'd waste hours on it, jumping from one site to another. One night, I was on 4chan, and some folks were talking about this chat room on the dark web. I knew a bit about the dark web. It's that hidden part of the internet you can't just Google. You need this special browser, Tor, to get on it. It's not like the usual sites I'd hang out on. It's more underground. So I thought, why not, and got Tor. Using the info from the 4chan thread, I found the chat room. It was wild. People from all over, talking about all sorts of weird stuff. It was different, kind of thrilling in a way. That's when Lila started chatting with me. She said she was around my age and lived a couple of towns over. We got talking, and then she mentioned she had a photo she wanted to share. Now, I'd heard stories about downloading random files from strangers, viruses, malware, or just plain creepy stuff. I had this gut feeling telling me to be careful, but then again, she seemed genuine, and I was curious to put a face to the name. So, against that nagging voice in my head, I went ahead and downloaded it. I really didn't know the mess I was stepping into. After downloading the file, I checked out the photo. It showed some girl who looked about my age, just smiling back. But then again, something weird happened. The little light next to my webcam lit up. I hadn't clicked on any video chat, so it freaked me out. I tried to turn off the computer, but it acted like it had a mind of its own. That light stayed on, and I was positive someone was watching me. I felt like I was about to piss myself. I had heard stories about hackers accessing webcams and spying on people. Right then and there, I became fully convinced that this Lila girl wasn't who she said she was. I slapped a piece of tape over the webcam in a hurry, but it didn't help me feel any less panicked. Thinking about my parents finding out made everything 10 times worse. They had always trusted me with tech stuff since I hadn't really messed up before, but this was a massive fail. I had felt like they would be so disappointed, not just because of the potential danger, but because I had been so dumb. It felt like all the trust they placed in me was all going to be out the window. The next day, I thought maybe things would die down, but logging into my social media proved me wrong. My inbox was flooded with messages from accounts that looked like they were made just to mess with me. No posts, no followers, just blank profiles. But the messages, they were next level creepy. One said, "Your mom looked pretty in her blue dress today." Another read, "Like that red hoodie you wore to school." I almost had a full-blown panic attack. This wasn't just some random trolling. They were watching me and my family closely. I went into overdrive, trying to lock everything down. I set my accounts to private and changed my passwords. But before I could even turn on two-factor authentication, more messages came in. They described the inside of my house, the posters on my bedroom wall, even the brand of cereal I had for breakfast. It was a freaking total nightmare. The worst part is one of those accounts sent a picture of my front door, taken from just outside. The realization hit me like a freight train. This wasn't just online stalking. This person, whoever they were, was right outside my house, watching every move. The safety I felt at home was completely shattered. I knew I had to act fast. Without wasting a second, I shut down my computer, grabbed my phone, and ran straight to my parents' room. I spilled everything, from the chat room on the dark web to the creepy messages and photos. My dad immediately called the police while my mom tried to calm me down. We all huddled in the living room, waiting, the silence only broken by the occasional car passing by outside. The police arrived quickly. They took a look at my computer and the file I had downloaded. One of the officers, who seemed to know a bit about tech, said that the file likely contained a Trojan, a kind of malware that gave the hacker access to my system. They advised us to get a professional to clean the computer and to change all of our passwords. They also promised to patrol our area more frequently for the next few weeks and told us to stay vigilant and report any suspicious activity. What surprised me most was my parents' reaction. I had expected anger, disappointment, or a mix of both, but instead, they were overwhelmingly concerned about my safety. My mom kept checking in on me, making sure I was okay, and my dad spent hours researching online security measures. It wasn't about the mistake I made, it was about ensuring it never happened again. As you can imagine, I never went back to the dark web. For the sake of my own safety, I won't reveal my real name. I've lived in Miami, Florida for all of my 28 years. Miami's got its perks, like beaches, parties, and the occasional hurricane warning. But there's a dark spot in my past. 8 years back, my cousin disappeared. We were tight, like sisters. Her absence left a void. A couple of weeks before she vanished, I gave her this locket. It was a simple silver locket with some rose designs on it. We placed a photo of us inside from a day we spent at the beach. That locket was our little secret, something special between us. During college, a friend showed me the ropes of the dark web, and I sometimes explore it when I had nothing better to do. One of those nights, I ended up on this sketchy site. The layout was cluttered, with listings accompanied by grainy photos and vague descriptions. It kind of reminded me of eBay, but everything about this site screamed red flag. But still, I was curious and decided to continue looking for a little bit. As I sifted through the weird, bizarre items, I caught something that looked very familiar. I stopped dead in my tracks. Right there, on the screen, was the locket. The exact one I gave my cousin. My hands were shaky as I moved the mouse to click on the listing. All it said was, "Silver locket, rose design, with photo inside." The price was crazy high. It didn't make sense for just a locket, unless someone knew why it was special. I tried to find out more about the seller. The username was BoneCollector33. No real name, no location, nothing. The other stuff they were selling looked normal, but had the same crazy high prices. It hit me then. Maybe every item had a backstory, just like my cousin's locket. I had to get that locket back. Messaging the seller directly seemed like a bad idea, but I thought maybe I could pretend to be a buyer, act interested without letting on why. It wasn't a great plan, but it was all I had. So, I made a fake account and shot a message to BoneCollector33, hoping I'd find something, anything, about where my cousin might have gone. I was a bundle of nerves, constantly checking my messages, waiting for that one notification. Then, one late night, it finally came. Bone Collector 33 has replied. My stomach twisted in knots. The message was straightforward. Interested in the locket? Send the payment. I'll ship it. There was a link to a payment portal and a note indicating it would be shipped from overseas. The fact that it was coming from overseas added another layer of mystery. This person had the locket, and it was somewhere halfway across the world. I made the payment, my curiosity outweighing my caution. It took about a week, but a package finally made its way to me. It was wrapped in old, worn-out paper, and the return address was smudged, making it completely unreadable. I carefully unwrapped the package. Inside was the locket, cold to the touch. Still, it didn't sit right with me. When I opened it, the photo of us was gone, replaced with a note. The handwriting was unfamiliar, and the message was chilling. Looking for lost things can sometimes lead you to places you never wanted to go. I had a bad feeling about all of this, and I realized that by buying the locket, I might have opened a door to something I wasn't prepared for. I couldn't just let it go. The locket, the note, the whole situation felt like a puzzle I needed to solve. So, I decided to do some digging. I reached out to some of those tech-savvy friends from college, hoping they could trace the origins of Bone Collector 33. They were hesitant at first, warning me about the dangers of prying too deep into the dark web. But seeing how desperate I was, they agreed to help. After a few days, one of them got back to me. They couldn't find much about the user, but they did discover that the payment portal was linked to several other accounts, all selling items with personal significance. With the locket in hand, I went to the local police station thinking they might be able to make some sense of it, or at least find a connection to my cousin. I explained everything from the dark web purchase to the eerie note inside the locket. The officers took notes, examined the locket, but in the end, they were as baffled as I was. Without more evidence or leads, their hands were tied. They handed the locket back, and I left feeling completely defeated. Unfortunately, my story doesn't end with a happy ending. So I don't feel comfortable providing you with my actual name. So, let's just say my name is Brandon for the sake of this story. Hopefully, by the time you're done hearing me out, you'll understand why. I'm in my mid-20s now, but what I'm about to share with you happened back in my college days. It was my final year at college in North Carolina, and my life was pretty mundane for the most part. I was just a regular dude. I was juggling assignments, hanging out with friends, working a part-time job, stuff like that. One night, I was in my dorm room, just scrolling through Facebook, checking out some posts, and then hopped over to Instagram. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary, but then, things started getting weird. I noticed some weirdness on my social media accounts. At first, it was just little things, like posts I didn't remember liking, or odd comments here and there. I didn't think much of it, and just figured I was being forgetful or something. But then, it got worse. I started getting these bizarre messages from people I didn't know. They were asking about posts and messages that I had no memory of sending. That's when it hit me that something was really wrong. I went through my accounts, trying to figure out what was happening. It was like watching a train wreck in slow motion. The worst part was when I realized my personal information had been messed with. I found out that my social media profiles were hacked. I mean, it's one thing to deal with a virus or some adware, but knowing someone else was in control of my accounts, that was a whole different level of creepy. They had access to everything. My photos, messages, even my list of contacts. I started panicking, not gonna lie. I changed all my passwords, set up two-factor authentication, the works. But the damage was already done. My online presence was compromised, and I had no idea what these hackers had already taken or done with my information. I felt exposed, vulnerable, and pissed. It's hard to describe how unnerving it is to lose control over your own digital life. The real kicker came when I received this anonymous email. At the time, I was still struggling with processing everything that was happening. The email said that my personal information, stuff I'd never want anyone to see, was stolen and sold on the dark web. I felt sick to my stomach. They even mentioned specific details, things only someone who'd gone through my accounts would know. And then came the demand, $25,000, or else they'd release everything else that were 100% not something I'd want the public or family to see. The hacker made it crystal clear they weren't bluffing by attaching a certain video clip of me. That ransom alone almost sent me into cardiac arrest. $25,000. I was a college student, barely making ends meet with a part-time job and some savings. There was no way I could come up with that kind of money. And now knowing the kind of dirt they had on me, I can't even begin to describe how ashamed and scared I was. The things they threatened to leak were deeply personal. I'm not comfortable getting into specifics, but let's just say they were intimate moments and conversations meant to be private. The thought of that stuff being out in the open was horrifying. I felt violated, like I'd been stripped of my dignity. And the worst part was, I couldn't even go to the police. The blackmailers made it clear that if I tried to get help, they would not only release my information, but also go after my family. I spent days trying to figure out what to do. I was losing sleep, my grades started slipping, and I became this paranoid wreck. I stopped using social media entirely, which only made me feel more isolated. I talked to a few close friends, but I was too embarrassed to tell them everything. It felt like I was trapped in a nightmare. Eventually, I realized I couldn't meet their demands. I didn't have the money, and there was no guarantee that paying them would make the problem go away. It was a hopeless situation. When I didn't pay up, they followed through on their threat. My private life was splashed all over the internet for anyone to see. It was the most humiliating experience of my life. The fallout was immediate and brutal. Friends, family, people I barely knew, they all saw things that were never meant for them. My reputation was in shreds. I tried to do damage control, but it was like trying to patch up a sinking ship. I was mocked, judged, and pitied, and it felt like there was nothing I could do to escape it. It took me 2 years to even start getting my life back together. I moved to Georgia after graduation, trying to leave it all behind. Starting over wasn't easy, but it was necessary. I'm doing better now, but those years were a living hell. I'm a hell of a lot more careful in private. I learned the hard way just how vulnerable we all are online. It's a chapter of my life I never want to revisit, but it's a story that needs to be told as a warning, if nothing else. When I think back to my junior year of high school, I cringe when I realize how naive I was. At the time, I made a new friend, and his name was Taylor. He was new to the school, kinda quiet, but we got along pretty quick. We would hang out after school most days, mostly at his place. His house was freaking huge. This kid was 16 years old, and was basically living the dream. Taylor's dad, though, he was something else. He dressed in these fancy suits, always had a different luxury car in the driveway. I used to joke with Taylor, asking if his dad was some kind of secret agent or something. He would just laugh it off, saying his dad ran an online business, But the thing was, I never really knew what that business was. Taylor was vague about it, and his dad? Well, he was like a ghost. The more time I spent at Taylor's, the more I noticed how odd things were. His dad was always heading down to the basement, locked away for hours. It was like his own little world down there. He would come up for food or a quick break, but that was it. Taylor didn't talk much about it either. He just said his dad's office was down there and he didn't like to be disturbed. One day, I got curious and asked Taylor if we could see what his dad was up to in the basement. He just brushed it off, saying it was boring business stuff. That only intensified my level of curiosity even more. I had all sorts of thoughts and ideas running through my mind at that moment about what the hell his dad was up to down there. I kept joking about it, trying to lighten the mood, but Taylor never budged on it. Things started to get really weird when I would hear strange noises coming from the basement. It would sort of sound like muffled screams, but it was so hard to know for sure. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I would hear it when I stayed over. Taylor would just tell me it's probably his dad working late. I really had a hard time believing that, but I couldn't understand why. I just knew something weird was going on down there. The turning point was this one night. I was crashing at Taylor's and I woke up super thirsty. I went downstairs for a drink, and that's when I heard these faint, desperate sounds, like someone was in pain. It was coming from the basement. My heart was pounding, bro. I knew something wasn't right. But before I could do anything, Taylor found me and ushered me back upstairs, making some excuse about how their furnace was old and makes weird noises sometimes. After that night at Taylor's, I was seriously spooked. I just knew that some shady stuff was going on in that house. A couple of weeks later, I saw this guy outside my regular coffee spot. He looked sketchy, all jumpy and paranoid, like he was expecting trouble to jump out at him at any second. So, I went up to him, trying not to freak him out. "Hey dude, you alright? You look like you've seen a ghost or something," I said, keeping it light. He eyed me the whole time, like he was sizing me up. I introduced myself as Sean, just a high school kid, hoping he'd feel comfortable talking. He told me his name was Rodney. This poor guy was seriously on edge, but at the same time, you could tell he had a lot to say, but was just afraid to. We started chatting, and I casually mentioned hanging out a lot at my buddy's place. When I described Taylor's house, Rodney's reaction was like an alarm bell, pure fear. Slowly, he began to unravel his story, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Rodney told me about being held captive in a place that sounded too much like Taylor's house. He talked about a basement where he was forced to stay awake for insane amounts of time, and that it was part of some sick experiment. He described cameras, live feeds, a whole horror show set up for some dark web audience. The dude who took him had threatened to kill his family if he ever breathed a word to the police. I was completely blown away. As Ronnie kept talking, the pieces started falling into place. The weird noises from the basement, Taylor's strange behavior, his dad's secret life. I realized we had to do something fast. Rodney was scared to death, but I managed to convince him to go to the cops with me. I promised him I would have his back and support his story with what I had witnessed. It took a while for him to actually trust me and convince him to follow my plan, but thankfully, he finally agreed. So, together, we went to the police. We told them everything, including Rodney's horror story and the weird stuff at Taylor's that I experienced for myself. We begged them to keep us anonymous since we were terrified of what would happen if Taylor and his dad heard we ratted them out. The police acted quickly. They raided Taylor's house and what they uncovered was straight up horrifying. The basement was a real-life house of horrors, set up to broadcast these twisted experiments on the dark web. Taylor and his dad were arrested. Their sick, dark web operation exposed. The cops kept most of it under wraps, probably because it was so disturbing. But they did let me know that Taylor was working alongside his dad in luring in these victims. After everything came out, I was left reeling. Thinking back to all those times at Taylor's, what was happening right underneath us, it's disturbing as hell. This world is full of sick and twisted people, and I just so happened to be best friends with one. I'm just thankful I was never caught up in their sick experiments, and that Rodney finally got some closure. Hi, my name is Daisy, and I'm hoping that my story can be used as a warning for other young women like myself. Thinking back of what I went through is extremely traumatic for me, but I'm willing to suffer through it again, even if it means I help save the life of just one other person. So, here it goes. I met Sergio online, and things were pretty amazing at first. We hit it off instantly. He was charming, funny, and seemed really into me. We would spend hours talking, and it felt like we had known each other forever. It's crazy, but after only a few weeks, we decided to move in together. I know. It sounds reckless, but at the time, it just felt right. We found this apartment in a nice complex in town. It wasn't anything fancy, but it was our little place. Moving in together was exciting. We were setting up our space, making plans. You know, all the lovey-dovey stuff. But there was this one box of Sergio's that just sat there, unopened. He kept saying he would get to it, but he never did. He seemed sort of protective about the box, and I always found it kind of strange, but I was too in love to see the obvious red flag. Then, one day, while Sergio was at work, I decided to do some cleaning up. That's when I found it. This weird, black leather-bound book in his box. It had a key lock, which was strange. I wondered why would anyone want to lock a book. So, obviously, I got curious. I started looking through his other boxes, and I found this old key inside an envelope. I happened to find this envelope by chance, since it fell out of a folder and the key was kind of sticking out. I know I probably shouldn't have, but I couldn't help myself. I tried the key on the book, and it actually fit. My heart was pounding as I slowly unlocked it and opened the cover. What I found inside made me run to the bathroom and throw up. There were pages and pages of detailed descriptions of women, their age, height, weight, hair color, eye color, everything. And there were dates too, birth and death dates. And the way they died, it was gruesome, horrifying. That's when it hit me. This book, it was about his victims. These women, they all had been murdered, and the descriptions were so detailed, so personal. It was like he knew them, like he had been close to them. And then I saw the pattern. He had moved in with several of these women before they died. It was all across different states, but the story was always the same. Move in, then murder. I didn't know what to do. I was scared out of my mind. I couldn't stay there, not with that book, not with the thought of what Sergio might be capable of. So, I grabbed the book and drove straight to the police station. I was shaking the whole way there, barely able to keep it together. I ran inside, almost hysterical. Officers ran over to me to see what was wrong, and that's when I told them everything. I showed them the book and begged them to do something. I was terrified for my life. After I gave the book to the police, they acted quickly. They arrested Sergio at his workplace. I was in a daze, waiting at home, terrified and hoping for news. The police later told me that Sergio didn't resist the arrest, which somehow made it even more chilling. They didn't go into details about the interrogation, but they said enough to make it clear that he wasn't denying anything. What I know about Sergio's confession came mostly from the trial. Sitting in that courtroom, hearing the evidence laid out, It was surreal. The prosecutor described how Sergio had confessed to the murders. He detailed his methods, his selection of victims, and his chilling lack of remorse. The descriptions were clinical, detached, but they painted a picture of a man who was not just a murderer, but a meticulous planner of his crimes. The book I found was discussed extensively. The prosecution explained that it was both a diary of his heinous acts and a guidebook. Sergio had obtained it from the dark web, using it as a blueprint for his murders. They said the book included instructions on targeting and murdering young women, and even went into gruesome details like cooking, a fact that made my stomach turn in the courtroom. Hearing the evidence, seeing the photos, and listening to the testimonies of experts and investigators was overwhelming. The realization that I could have been one of his victims was a weight I carried every day. Sergio sat there during the trial, mostly expressionless. There was no sign of the man I thought I knew, no glimpse of remorse or guilt in his eyes. His sentence was a foregone conclusion. Life in prison without the possibility of parole. As the judge delivered the sentence, there was a palpable sense of relief in the courtroom, but it was mixed with a deep, lingering sorrow for the lives lost and the families shattered. Life after the trial has been a slow process of trying to rebuild and find some sense of normalcy. I moved away, started a new job, and tried to put distance between myself and those horrifying events. But the memories, the fear, and the realization of how close I came to being a victim myself linger. I keep thinking about what could have happened, what he had planned for me. It's like I can't escape it, even now. I'm always looking over my shoulder, always wondering if there's someone else out there like Sergio. The worst part is, I trusted him. I loved him. And he was a monster. It makes you wonder about people, about what they're capable of hiding. I guess I'm just trying to move on, trying to forget. But sometimes, there are memories that make a permanent home in your mind, forever.